Obi-Wan knew that he was dreaming, but he couldn't bring himself to stop it, to escape what he knew was coming. It would have been logical to flee, but there were so many damn emotional knots around this moment, and they always bound him in place. The dream was a memory, and it was always the same. He was stalking back and forth, willing the blasted red shielding to cycle so that he could rejoin his master. His long Padawan braid flew out behind him as he paced, unable to keep still or even pretend to emulate Qui-Gon's determined calm. How Qui-Gon could stop to meditate in the midst of a fucking battle with a Sith, Obi-Wan couldn't even begin to comprehend. The shield cycled. Obi-Wan's lip curled in an involuntary snarl as he prepared to run. He saw Qui-Gon leap to his feet as the shield blocking him from the Sith vanished. But then Qui-Gon halted in surprise. The Sith was no longer present, but someone else was. Just as dark, the black garbed figure's features were hidden by a hooded cloak. He raised his lightsaber, impossibly fast, a perfect strike. Obi-Wan screamed, "Too little, too late." The red lightsaber pierced Qui-Gon's chest when his master was unable to react in time to this new player. He slumped, and then fell when the blade was yanked free. Obi-Wan stared, horrified, as the Dark One raised his head. Eyes gone yellow with corruption stared into his own. His laughter could barely be heard over the roaring in Obi-Wan's ears. "Enough. Enough." Obi-Wan forced himself to awaken. He was staring up into the darkness of Qui-Gon's bedroom, in the Jedi Temple, on Coruscant, not Naboo. Obi-Wan instinctively reached out for his partner, and his fingers encountered fabric, not bare skin. He sat up in surprise, confusion quickly turning to alarm. There was a stink of burnt ozone in the air, almost as if the scent had followed him from the dream. Beside him, Qui-Gon was fully dressed, his long hair fanning the pillow. Streaks of gray were easily discernible, even in the dim light. Obi-Wan moaned, gripped by familiar fear. With one hand pressed to his mouth, he pulled back the sheet that covered Qui-Gon, catching sight of the lightsaber wound that marred Qui-Gon's body. Steel-blue eyes snapped open, staring up at Obi-Wan, dark and cold. "Foolish boy," the thing beside him whispered in a voice full of wrath. "There are some things that you are never going to understand." Qui-Gon snapped awake with a hiss of indrawn breath when one of Obi-Wan's elbows jammed itself into his ribs. It wasn't an uncommon occurrence, not the way they often traveled, but he wasn't used to it happening when he was at home and in his own bed. There was an almost tangible air of anxiety, of horror, filling the room. "Force," Qui-Gon thought, as he realized the source of the sour miasma. Obi-Wan was caught in a nightmare. A bad one, if the agonized look on his face was any indication. Before he could decide to act on it, Obi-Wan sat bolt upright in bed with a choked scream. He took a shrill breath and then shoved his hand into his mouth, biting down as a second, terrified scream lodged itself in Obi-Wan's throat. Gods. Qui-Gon had seen the nightmare cycle through more than once, but this seemed particularly vile. He sat up and wrapped his arms around Obi-Wan, who was shocked cold and trembling. It was a long time before the shaking eased, before Obi-Wan released a ragged sigh and relaxed against him. Qui-Gon ran his fingers through Obi-Wan's hair until the worst of the anxiety had dissipated. "What was it?" he asked. Obi-Wan shook his head without looking up. "I don't know. I can't remember." Qui-Gon frowned. "The cycle?" "Oh, it had better not be," Obi-Wan growled. "It's far too damn early." He sighed again. "I think my brain is trying to kill me." Qui-Gon received a jumbled, unintentional broadcast of sensation. Comfort. Warmth. Stiff pain in the neck. All of that was accompanied by a disjointed string of thought. "Peaceful afterwards. Unusual. Used to having to deal with this alone." "You never have to do that again, you know." Qui-Gon murmured the words against Obi-Wan's hair. "I will always be here for you, if you wish it." Obi-Wan sat up and turned around to face him, staring into Qui-Gon's eyes. "I do wish it," he said in a soft voice. Qui-Gon smiled, unable to disguise the happiness that Obi-Wan's words had given him. There had been a promise inherent in his response, hinting at a desire for a deeper connection. "Then lie down with me, love, and let me hold you as you sleep. Let me keep the dreams at bay for once." Obi-Wan fell asleep within a few minutes. Qui-Gon resettled his head on the pillow, wrapping his arm more tightly around Obi-Wan's chest. He stayed awake for a time, but whatever had plagued Obi-Wan's sleep did not seem intent upon a repeat performance. It wasn't just watchfulness that kept him awake. Obi-Wan had said he didn't remember what he'd dreamed of, and Qui-Gon believed him. But he'd be damned if it wasn't something related to Naboo. Qui-Gon started awake, momentarily confused both by the amount of light in his room and the otherwise empty bed. Then he heard the clatter of ceramic against countertop, followed by his partner's muttered swearing. It was a familiar combination of sounds, though not one he often heard in his own home. Qui-Gon smiled. As far as introductions to the day went, this was one he could quickly get used to. In the kitchen, he found Obi-Wan dressed in tunics and trousers, not the leather, and sitting at the table, giving the reader on the tabletop a look of intense curiosity.
"Where did those come from?"
Qui-Gon asked, accepting the mug of dark green tea that Obi-Wan handed him. The tea was nice, but the kiss was better, especially when it was followed by Obi-Wan's bright-eyed, impish smile.
"Thank the quartermaster,"
and his willful insistence upon ignoring our current addresses, Obi-Wan said, tilting his head in the direction of a laundry crate sitting in the living room. It must have been delivered while we were out playing in the desert. Of course it was. Qui-Gon sipped his tea and regarded his partner, who had resumed his perusal of the datapad. Obi-Wan glanced up after a moment, aware of the scrutiny. What is it? I am desperately trying to resist the urge to ask you to move in with me. Obi-Wan laughed. I think the only people in the temple who would think it a sudden choice are the two of us. Is that a yes? Qui-Gon asked, resting his fingertips on the back of Obi-Wan's left hand. It's a yes with a provision attached, Obi-Wan replied, smile turning wry. I don't think Anakin will protest, but it's still polite to ask if he would mind the shuffle. Fair enough. Qui-Gon turned his focus back to his tea for a moment, if only because otherwise he was going to forget it entirely in lieu of being stupidly, spectacularly happy. What are you reading? Obi-Wan handed over the datapad, that curiously intent look making another appearance. This. Qui-Gon scrolled through the news listings, noting content by title or summary. Coruscant was still buzzing with the news of the Trade Federation's blockade of Naboo. Most of the threads centered around the fact that the Senate seemed utterly unwilling to even speak of the problem, let alone act on it. Qui-Gon was pleased to see Finnis take advantage of the stonewalling. The man had given another conference an hour ago, reiterating his word to assist the Naboo, while castigating the Senate for its lack of action. Is it different? He asked, handing the pad back to his partner. Obi-Wan bit his lip before answering. It's very different, he said. Enough so that I'm cautiously optimistic about our return to Naboo not being an utter clusterfuck. When they went to see Micah Geet, the other master was far less sanguine about the situation. He was pacing back and forth across his living room, brace jangling and staff thumping with every emphatic step. Are they so used to inaction that they can't even be bothered to lift their fingers, even for their beloved popularity? Mike, they're politicians, Qui-Gon said. Right now, they're trying to figure out which option will serve them best. He noted that Micah's limp was growing more and more pronounced. Please, sit down before you fall down. Micah glared at him, and then winced as the pain made itself known. Fine, he huffed, hobbling his way over to sit in the nearest chair. Qui-Gon felt a brief pang of sadness. Despite the healer's optimism, the injury from Yunchor hadn't healed well, no matter how much rafting and physical therapy was thrown at it. Obi-Wan was sitting at Qui-Gon's back, staring out of Micah and Tall's living room window. The Senate Dome was visible on this side of the temple as well, and it captured much of his partner's attention. Obi-Wan surprised them both when he said, "At least they didn't call the vote to elect a new chancellor." Qui-Gon exchanged looks with Micah. What did happen? Qui-Gon asked. They were past the point of the event in question, and Obi-Wan would often fill in those missing blanks after the fact. By 12th hour today, we had a new chancellor. Didn't do the Naboo any good. Or anyone else, for that matter, Obi-Wan added. Whatever you said to Valorum yesterday seems to have helped. Micah gave Qui-Gon a narrow-eyed look. And this is coming from the man who always bitched at me about neutrality. Qui-Gon shrugged. Self-preservation overrides political neutrality in my book. Obi-Wan hopped down from the back of the couch and came around to face them. Where's Tull? She was supposed to be back on Coruscant before us. Qui-Gon and Micah shared another glance. They probably looked about as subtle as Minox in heat. Obi-Wan knew that Tall had been taking Bant Eren out on research trips, but not the purpose of those missions. Qui-Gon was leery about telling his partner what Tirza had found in his midichlorian count, much less the prophecy research crumbs that Tall was hunting for.
She was supposed to be, yes, Micah answered finally. But then she found a new lead, sent me a blunt little message that our bank account was going to dwindle, and headed on to Moros 4. Said they've got a fantastic archive there.
That they do, Obi-Wan agreed in a mild voice.
What is she looking for?
Micah looked at Qui-Gon. One eyebrow raised.
What could it hurt?
He sent along their own pair bond.
At this juncture? Not much, Qui-Gon admitted.
Aloud, Micah said.
She's been researching the prophecy of the Chosen One pretty much since Qui-Gon cut your braid.
Obi-Wan tilted his head in acknowledgement.
I thought she might, he said, smiling. She's been looking at me as if she would desperately love to talk about something, but then never brings it up. I assume there's been a reason you didn't want me to know.
His expression was neutral, but there was a hint of something elusive in the pair bond.
I've been curious about it myself, but there hasn't been much time for research.
Obi-Wan looked unhappy, and Qui-Gon suddenly found he could put a name to the elusiveness. It was the self-directed anger that Obi-Wan had felt yesterday during landing. Damn, he thought, feeling a sharp twist of foreboding. What trouble had their urge for secrecy already created?
Obi-Wan, Micah started to say.
But Qui-Gon stood and raised his hand, cutting him off. The time for discretion in this matter was over.
Mike, it was my decision. I'll tell him.
Tell me what? Obi-Wan asked, looking at each of them in turn, brow furrowed.
What in the Force have you been keeping from me? It had better have been with good reason, damn it, or I'll...
He glared at Qui-Gon.
I'll burn those pants.
The threat made him smile.
Do you remember when Tirza took Anakin's midichlorian count when we brought him to the temple?
Obi-Wan nodded.
She took yours as well.
Well, yes, Obi-Wan said. Confused.
She said she needed a...
He trailed off, a dawning look of comprehension in his eyes.
How different.
Qui-Gon wished that he didn't have to say. It would be so much easier for both of them if he'd never known. If Tirza had taken that information to the Council on her own.
22,000.
Obi-Wan's eyes widened.
22. He looked away, heaving an agitated sigh. Well, I suppose saying that it isn't possible would be a pointless exercise, wouldn't it?
I suppose it would,
Qui-Gon agreed, lifting his arms in invitation. Obi-Wan came to him and stepped in close, allowing himself to be held. His body was a line of tension in Qui-Gon's arms, one just barely soothed by Qui-Gon's hands resting on his back.
Damn, Micah blurted in disgust. I lost the bet.
Qui-Gon glared at Micah for his bad timing, while Obi-Wan sputtered laughter into his tunics. He glanced down at Obi-Wan when Micah remained unrepentant.
Are you all right?
Obi-Wan rested his head against Qui-Gon's chest, taking several deep breaths.
I'll be fine. To be honest, after the initial shock, I'm not even sure if I'm really surprised. I sort of got used to strange things happening to me some time ago.
So does this mean I get to keep the pants?
Qui-Gon asked. Qui-Gon could feel Obi-Wan's amusement.
Yes, you may keep the leather.
Why didn't you tell me? Obi-Wan asked aloud. I decided not to tell you at first because I thought, after everything that had happened, you might need time to adjust. After that, I didn't tell you because we were no longer sure what it meant.
Qui-Gon smiled.
Or perhaps it's because you know so blasted much. The rest of us mortals wanted to be able to keep some secrets. Come on, then.
Obi-Wan tugged on Qui-Gon's hand, leading him towards Micah's couch to sit.
I need you both to tell me what Tala's found so far.
It didn't take long to review Tal's findings. Even those who were privy to all of the information didn't know much more than what was already in the archives. Obi-Wan leaned back in his seat, staring up at the ceiling with a thoughtful expression.
You know, I would almost swear that it all sounds familiar.
Anything specific? Micah asked,
rotating his walking staff in his hands as he performed an abbreviated kata.
Tal could sure use a hint at this point.
No. Sorry.
Obi-Wan shook his head.
But if you're right about the concept of the three, then I'm willing to bet that there's someone else running around the galaxy with a higher-than-average midichlorian count.
Micah made a disgruntled face.
None of us had thought of that at all. Damn.
Qui-Gon looked at Obi-Wan. The idea of anyone else suffering through nightmares and dreams and decades of memory they hadn't yet lived had horrified Shmi and Qui-Gon both from the very beginning, and time had not lessened the feeling.
Any idea who it could be?
Obi-Wan lifted his hands in dismay.
I don't know. This is as new to me as it is to you, and I'm not about to go around poking everyone I meet with a blood analyzer to find out.
He stood up, stretching once before pulling his tunics back into place.
I need to go. I promised Anakin that I would meet him for lunch. Would you like some company?
Qui-Gon offered.
Thank you anyway, but Master Geet has that scheming look on his face, Obi-Wan replied. I'll leave you to his tender mercies.
Qui-Gon gave him a feigned mournful look.
Abandoning me already.
Obi-Wan raised an eyebrow before leaning over Qui-Gon, kissing him, long and deep, in front of a completely boggled Micah.
Never.
Qui-Gon watched him leave, thinking that he must look utterly besotted. Force that the man could kiss. Micah snickered the moment the door closed.
I should have guessed. You looked far too happy when you walked in my door this morning. I am far too happy,
Qui-Gon admitted, resting his hands on his knees as he leaned forward.
Happy, but worried. Obi-Wan is angry about something, and has been since we got back to Coruscant.
Obi-Wan had promised to speak of it. Qui-Gon just wasn't sure he wanted to know.
I'm almost certain that it's about the Sith.
Micah nodded.
I hope not, but I wouldn't be surprised. Adi told me what happened in the council chamber, by the way. That shielding sounds damn useful. You weren't there, Mike.
Qui-Gon leaned back, crossing his arms at the remembered chill.
It's horrifying. No one should cut themselves off from the Force like that. It's unnatural.
Micah seemed amused.
I don't think that's what he did, Qui-Gon. Does Obi-Wan really strike you as someone who would willingly cut himself off from the Force?
Qui-Gon sighed.
No, you're right. Of course I'm right.
Micah slammed his staff down on the floor with enough force to rattle the shelving.
I'm not a combat master for nothing. You take away your enemy's advantages, not your own. I say he didn't cut himself off from the Force. I'd bet that he hid within it, and I'm going to ask him to teach me how to do it.
Qui-Gon smiled.
Why? So you can hide from your enemies and then bash them with that stick of yours as they walk by?
Hell yes.
Micah's smile was all teeth.
That sounds like a fantastic idea.
Qui-Gon hesitated.
You're serious, aren't you?
Yes,
Micah shouted back. Teaching the ALT class is great, Qui-Gon. Don't get me wrong, he said in a quieter voice.
But I'm oh so bored, and have been for quite some time. My mate has been useful for years, despite what happened to her. I think it's time that I was useful again, too.
Qui-Gon gave Micah a thoughtful look.
Perhaps it is. What about Garen?
Garen will think it's a great idea,
Micah replied, his expression becoming fond.
My Padawan may spend all of his time becoming one of the best pilots the Temple has, but I'd still like another field mission or two with him before his trials. Besides, then there's someone with me who can save my ass if something goes wrong.
Obi-Wan shook his head in silent, opinionated disgust and pushed away his empty tray. There hadn't been much on it to begin with, but even those few samplings had reminded him of why he stood by his opinion on commissary food. The toast he'd pilfered from Qui-Gon's quarters had more flavor.
What are your plans for the day?
He asked his companion.
As far as I remember, you have a free afternoon.
Anakin did not share Obi-Wan's reservations about the commissary's culinary lackings. He was working on his second tray, and the rate at which he was consuming food would have put a grown man into a stupor. Obi-Wan suspected a long-delayed growth spurt. "Well, we're still technically mission-bound, so I can't just wander off," Anakin said, after washing down what he'd been chewing. "I was thinking of going to the creche to play with my friends." "That sounds nice," Obi-Wan thought, a touch wistfully. Visiting friends sounded far less stressful than brooding over politics.
"They do have classes of their own, though."
"Yeah, but I checked with Terry Lonar, and she said it was okay if I volunteered to help her with the rest of the Falcons." Anakin shoveled more food into his mouth, almost as if he was afraid it was going to go away. After taking a breath, he said, "I missed them. And the rumor mill is that Siney is going to be chosen soon. I want to see her before it's just about impossible to catch her in the temple." Obi-Wan grinned, well aware of whom Siney Ella's master was going to be.
"I'm not going to stop you, Annie. You deserve some free time. Take it while you can get it."
"Will do," Anakin said, not needing any further encouragement. "Hey, Master?"
"Yes?"
Obi-Wan swirled what was left of the water in his glass, wondering if he dared sample the commissary's tea. Anakin hesitated. "You and Master Qui-Gon, are you guys, you know, is everything going to be okay?"
"Wanting to know if your scheming bore fruit, are you?" Obi-Wan asked, smiling.
"Duh," Anakin said. "Did it?"
"If I asked how you felt about moving, what would you say?"
Anakin shoved his tray aside and lunged across the table to hug him. Obi-Wan held onto his Padawan, ignoring a few disapproving stares. Hidebound idiots. Anakin dropped back down onto his chair. "I'm being a smartass if I say finally, right?" he asked with another wide grin.
"A bit," Obi-Wan replied, holding his thumb and forefinger close together but not quite touching. "Try to keep the smartassery in decorous bounds, Padawan."
"Yes, Master," Anakin agreed, his smile not dimming an iota. "Do you know when we're going back to Naboo? I guess we probably shouldn't pack before that's done." Obi-Wan opened his mouth and then caught himself.
"Do you think we should?" he asked in a mild voice.
"Well, yeah," Anakin said, eyebrows drawing together. "If we're going to get the Trade Federation off of Naboo, we have to go back. Besides, if the Naboo and the Gungans don't make peace, Jar Jar's never going to be able to go home." Obi-Wan sat back in his chair, giving his Padawan a regretful stare.
"You remember."
Anakin ducked his head. "Not everything," he said in apology. "Not even close. But this is... it was really important last time. I remember a lot more of the Naboo stuff as we've done it." He raised his eyes cautiously to look at Obi-Wan. "You're not mad, are you?" Obi-Wan held back a sigh.
"No, Anakin, I'm not mad. I'm concerned."
"I never wanted you to be trapped with your memories the same way that I am." "Well, you don't have to be," Anakin pointed out. "If I know what's going to happen, I can be prepared when it does, and then run in the opposite direction."
Obi-Wan attempted to smile.
I suppose so.
You should get going, then. You're going to want to change clothes before going down to the crash.
I have also heard that the Falcons are meant to help the little ones paint today.
Anakin made a face. Green. Green everywhere, he said, snagging his and Obi-Wan's trays.
If something happens and you need me, I can come running, but the council chamber might get paint splatters on the floor.
Obi-Wan waved him off, amused. He watched as Anakin returned both trays before leaving the commissary, just barely quashing the urge to run for the lifts. He was thinking of making his own escape when he was boxed in. Abella sat down at his left, while Garen Mulln sat to his right. Before Obi-Wan could comment on the sudden close seating arrangements, Reeft and Alto Deya took the seats directly across from him.
I do believe I've been ambushed, Obi-Wan said.
Alto gave him a broad grin. The young man still had moments of temper, but Davron's departure from the temple had done a lot to repair old damage and animosities.
Of course it's an ambush, he said. You're always involved in the fun stuff, Kenobi, and we want the details that haven't hit the daily reports.
Garen elbowed Obi-Wan, who let out a faint woof of air. Garen's size meant that even his lightest gestures could land harder than he intended.
Yep, us poor pitiful Padawans don't rate the exciting stuff. By the way, would you like some calf? A lot of it?
Obi-Wan noted the mug of steaming, vile-brewed black calf clenched in Garen's hand.
Given the look in your eyes, I think you'd stab me if I tried to take it from you. Gods, Garen, how much have you had? Of this?
Garen took a long drink, decimating half of the mug's contents.
That depends. What day is this? I think I've lost track.
Obi-Wan shook his head.
What the hell are you doing?
Reeft smiled and answered for him.
Garen is taking all of his licensing finals at once this week. He decided to study them all en masse.
Reeft's smile widened, a particular curl at the corners of his mouth.
He vibrates.
Obi-Wan hid a grin behind his hand. When Garen and Reeft had finally gone forward with a public relationship last spring, Reeft had become a bit less shy about everything. Garen's bouncy antics made him realize that Abella had tucked herself in very close against Obi-Wan's side.
Is there something that you need?
The Chittanook girl eyed him, a gleam of curiosity in her eyes. Then she dropped her nose against his shoulder and sniffed, taking in a long, deep breath. Abella shook out her fur and settled back in her seat with a self-satisfied smirk on her face.
When?
Obi-Wan narrowed his eyes.
Last night, you utter wench.
Oh, gods! Abella exclaimed, and gave him a dirty look. I was off by one day. One! I was so close! Alto was trying, unsuccessfully, to hide his grin behind a tea mug.
It's about time. I thought we were going to have to lock the two of you in a bedroom just to get that process moved along.
Reeft offered him a wide smile, congratulations without insistent teasing. Garen, meanwhile, hugged Obi-Wan around the shoulders.
This is excellent news. It calls for more calf.
Garen, you're going to explode as it is.
Obi-Wan laughed and ducked out from under Garen's arm. Reift was right. Garen was vibrating.
Yeah, well, I need something to help me forget that I lost that damn bet, too. I had it pegged for 2 weeks from now, Garen said, slugging down the last of his calf.
Don't feel bad, Obi-Wan said, offering a sympathetic smile. I lost, too.
After a brief moment of astounded silence, Abella punched him in the arm.
You sneaky bastard! You bet on yourself? She asked, laughing.
Obi-Wan shrugged, keeping an inscrutable look on his face.
No harm in it, is there?
After Anakin let it slip that there was a betting pool on us in the first place, I thought it was funny.
Garen chuckled, slapped Obi-Wan's shoulder, and then slipped off to refill his mug with fresh calf.
Then who did win? Alto asked, glancing around the commissary to see if anyone was staring in their direction.
I'm not even sure who started the pool in the first place.
Abella grinned wide enough to show off her newly grown sharp teeth, the final mark of Chittanook adulthood.
Ask Master Windu. He knows.
Then she leaned up against Obi-Wan.
What was it like? She asked with a shameless smile.
Obi-Wan glared down at her.
The entire bloody temple knows that I'm having sex, and who with. That's all the information anyone is ever going to get.
Jeez, that's too bad. Garen sounded sad. I could have used some new material.
Obi-Wan looked askance at him, and then made a show of scooting as far away from Garen as he could get while the others laughed.
Anyway, Reift gave Garen a speculative look.
I can fix that.
Obi-Wan's comlink uttered an irritating chirp for attention, and his first primal response was to curse the device's entire existence. It was rare that so many of the people he had grown up with were in temple at the same time, and even rarer was the chance for them to sit down in one place like this. He put the irritation aside.
Kenobi, he answered, knowing that it wasn't Anakin or Qui-Gon. They had much more efficient means of reaching him.
Obi-Wan, it's Depa. The Master's voice filtered through the comm speaker, catching everyone's attention. I'm sorry to bother you, but I have a problem. Obi-Wan frowned and lowered the volume until her voice wouldn't travel beyond the ears of Obi-Wan and his friends.
What's wrong?
Master Jill Hira has gone missing, Depa replied, and that was when he heard the concern in her voice. She was supposed to meet with the healers early this morning, but never showed. I've looked for her in the Force as well as scanning the temple proper, but I'm not having any luck finding her. I thought you might be able to assist me, especially given what happened yesterday.
What happened yesterday?
Alto hissed the question, but Obi-Wan waved him to silence.
I could make the attempt, Obi-Wan said,
mentally shuffling through a list of potential starting places.
Where are her quarters?
As Depa rattled off their temple listing, Obi-Wan glanced around at his companions. All were accomplished Padawans on the verge of their trials. 3 knights and 1 healer-in-waiting. They would be good backup, but he wasn't going to ask. This felt like the sort of mission that one volunteered for.
We'll be there in 5 minutes, Obi-Wan said, and flipped off the comm.
He pressed his lips together, listening to the background hum of the Force.
Something was off, but it hadn't been enough to catch his senses until he'd gone specifically looking for it. Not reassuring. If something happens today because I didn't take the time to deal with it months ago, the fault is mine. Obi-Wan stood, his fingers brushing his lightsaber in quiet reminder. "Where do you think you're going?" Abella asked, gripping his arm before he could escape.
"Especially without us," Alto asked, rising from his seat.
Garen and Reeft were just behind him. Obi-Wan looked at each of them in turn, torn between pride and worry. They were as stubborn as he was, and there would be no dissuading them from following at his back.
"I have absolutely no idea what is about to happen. If I or Master Balaba tells you to run, then that had better damn well be what you do."
"What if we can help?" Alto asked.
"You don't understand."
Obi-Wan allowed years of leading military men onto hellish battlefields to fill his eyes and voice.
"There is a lot more at stake here than you are yet aware of. Running isn't an optional response. It's mandatory."
Reeft, Garen, and Alto seemed a bit taken aback by his words, but Abella smiled at him, a hint of the Chittanook predator revealing itself.
"We understand, Obi. We're Jedi, same as you." "Even if we're just retrieval, it's still a hell of a lot more interesting than what my day called for."
Alto grinned and shrugged. "Damn laundry."
They met Master Depa in the hall outside Jill Hira's quarters. The counselor raised a single, sculpted eyebrow at the group.
"Master Obi-Wan, you seem to have multiplied in the last 26 hours.
"Master Depa," Obi-Wan replied in kind. "I collected a group of volunteers, but they promised to behave themselves and respond accordingly, should anything drastic happen."
"I hope it doesn't come to that," Depa said in a soft voice.
She overrode the lock on Jill Hira's door and allowed it to slide aside. The moment he crossed the threshold, darkness was like a slap in Obi-Wan's face. His hand hovered over his lightsaber until he realized that the rooms were empty.
"Holy gods," Garen muttered, glancing around. "This place is fucking rank."
Sorry, Master Balaba, but it is."
"That's all right, Padawan Mulm," Depa replied, her eyes dark with concern. "I find I am quite fond of your apt description." Abella rubbed at her arms, where her fur was trying to stand on end.
"How could we not feel this until the door opened? The entire temple should be able to sense this."
"It feels like it wants to stick."
Alto looked around the room, scowling.
"I don't know about you guys, but I'm going to shower after this until I scrub off a few layers of skin."
Obi-Wan nodded absently. The further he stepped into the room, the more the altered currents of the Force tried to cling to him, whispering of dark things. He couldn't make out individual words, but the ideas stood out well enough. Disaster. Destruction. Death. 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 He shook off the annoyance and looked closer, tracing the lines of Jill Hira's quarters. There was a barrier surrounding the rooms, one he suspected was a variant of the shielding he'd demonstrated before the council yesterday. Obi-Wan had sensed no lingering darkness on Jill Hira's person when she'd been nearby. She had to have been hiding it, or perhaps... He shuddered at the thought. Perhaps someone else had hidden it for her. Abella, can you scent her? Abella nodded, but didn't look happy about it. You humans reek if you're nervous. Master Balaba, Master Jill Hira definitely has something on her mind. She was in these rooms this morning, but departed maybe 2 or 3 hours ago, if it was even that long. Obi-Wan finally managed to dig past all of the twisted and warped currents to find the pale yellow and gold strands of Jill Hira's Force signature, all but lost in a stranglehold of filth. "She's been coerced," he whispered, as the truth of Jill Hira's actions finally became clear. "And I didn't see it." He cursed himself before turning around to face the others. "We have to find her. Now." Deppa inclined her head in a grim nod. "You and Padawan healer Abella will lead us." Qui-Gon left his friend's quarters about an hour after Obi-Wan. He and Micah hadn't accomplished much. But after the past few months, it had been a relief to do something as simple as plan for someone's future. If Micah wanted guinea pigs to test new shielding and his ability to incorporate it defensively and offensively, well, it wouldn't be the first time they had played such games. He checked on the Parabond and found Obi-Wan busy, all of his attention focused elsewhere. Frowning, Qui-Gon checked on Anakin next. "Anakin," he said, nudging the training bond at the same time. "Yes, Master Qui-Gon?" Anakin replied, sounding distracted. "Did you need something?"
"Have you seen your master?"
Anakin's response was accompanied by a flare of dismay, a response to something else in his vicinity. "No, not since I left him in the commissary. Something wrong?"
"Probably not. What are you up to?"
Qui-Gon asked, as the dismay morphed into disgusted delight.
"I'm guessing it involves hurting small children."
"I'm helping the Falcons with some of the younger kids," Anakin replied, the training bond filling with undisguised happiness. "I missed hanging out with them, even if we are all ducking flying paint." Qui-Gon chuckled and stepped into the nearest empty turbo lift.
"Want some company? It sounds like a wonderful way to spend the afternoon."
It was a definite improvement over watching the political feeds and wanting to throttle a bunch of recalcitrant senators. "Are you sure you shouldn't just hunt down Master Obi-Wan and, you know, get some time to yourselves?" Qui-Gon almost missed the crush designation on the lift's control pad.
"You heard that?"
"No." Anakin was amused by his discomfort. "Talk to Obi-Wan about it today at lunch, but I knew even before he mentioned it. He looked a lot happier than he usually does."
"I'm being heartily embarrassed by a 9-year-old, Qui-Gon thought, smiling. "Who won the bet?"
Anakin's reply was steeped in smugness.
"I did."
Qui-Gon laughed as he exited the lift, straight into a raucous downpour of high-pitched, happy voices. The younglings were enthralled with the presence of the Padawan and the near-Padawans of the Falcon clan. And, true to form, there was paint everywhere. Qui-Gon resigned himself to many colorful handprints on his tunics, trousers, boots, and hair. His entrance was noticed by a tiny Rodian boy.
"Master Qui-Gon is here,"
he squeaked, and that was the signal. The entire group turned in Qui-Gon's direction like they were of a hive mind, and then tromped their way forward to attack as one many-handed entity.
Utterly doomed, Qui-Gon thought, smiling down at 40 brilliant-eyed, paint-smudged faces.
Obi-Wan and Depa Balaba making the trip on their own would have attracted attention within minutes. They were both too intent upon their quarry. Having Garen, Alto, Reeft, and Abella, however, offset the hunt, and thus they were all but ignored by passing Jedi. The only master to pay them any real attention was Sui Choi, who gave Obi-Wan a curious, searching glance.
"Ask later," Obi-Wan sent to the Alina master. "Join me in hoping that it's nothing."
Choi nodded in understanding and continued serenely on his way, even redirecting a curious Padawan while Obi-Wan's group crowded into an older, smaller lift that dropped them down to the lowest public area of the temple. The room was a smaller reflection of the grand stair far above. "Which way?" Depa asked, turning her head back and forth in the deserted chamber. "I confess I haven't been down here in many years."
"Still down," Abella said. "Obi-Wan?" "Here," Obi-Wan said, choosing the leftmost stairwell after consulting the tangled, corrupted threads.
It had been many years since he'd explored these old, forgotten paths. A young Padawan trotting at Qui-Gon's heels as his master showed him the oldest, earliest parts of the Coruscant Temple. The circular stairwell was as long and dark as he remembered it to be. The dust was as thick as the air, and disuse marked everything in sight.
"Get off my heels, man," Garen said to Alto at one point. "Nothing's going to eat us in the dark." "Sorry," Alto muttered. "I don't like small dark spaces."
The stairs let them out into a small room, where they all pulled out their lightsabers to double as light sources. There were glow panels in the walls and ceiling, flickering with half-hearted attempts at life. Abella sneezed, a harsh, unexpected sound that made Alto and Reef jump.
"Sorry," she whispered, rubbing her nose as her eyes watered. "It's the dust. There's just too much of it. You're going to have to finish the hunt, Obi-Wan."
Obi-Wan nodded, turning his attention to the room's potential exits.
"Three doors," he murmured, eyeing each one in turn.
"Left," suggested Abella, before she sneezed again. Beyond the door lay complete darkness, the light turning from dull yellow to cool blends of blue and green. They lifted their blades high, and the small group looked around in awe.
"Holy ghosts on a crispy stick," Garen breathed,
taking in the graceful arches of the vast ceiling overhead.
"I didn't know anything like this was down here."
The ancient walls were far more decorative than the higher levels, and included more panels for light. But the power cells were drained dry, and did no more than give the occasional useless flicker. Obi-Wan towed a line through the dust on the stone floor. This area had been out of the temple cleaning rotation for a long time. He thought it might be a good idea to make sure that was corrected. Abella reached out to trace the artful sweeping lines that graced the walls at shoulder level.
"This is incredible. We must be in an original part of the temple."
Her eyes flashed in the glow of their lightsabers. How old is this? About 1,000 years. Perhaps older, Depa answered. We're not far from Coruscant's surface. There's no natural light down here. See, there were once windows. She gestured towards the right, where a long bank of clear glass lined the upper wall. The only view beyond them was solid darkness. Many of the windows were broken, allowing in air that had a musty, fuzzy quality that made breathing difficult. Obi-Wan was only half listening to the conversation, trying to sort out Jill Hira's path. Abella had lost the scent trail to dust and sneezing fits at the end of the stairwell, and Jill Hira had been much more careful about her force signature after leaving the temple proper. He stepped forward when disturbed shapes on the floor caught his eye. Jill Hira had not been so careful about the footprints she left behind. This way. They found Jill Hira standing alone in a small, empty room, pacing back and forth through the dust. She was muttering under her breath, an unceasing litany, but Obi-Wan couldn't make it out. There was something hidden in her hands. The lightsabers cast enough light for him to see a glint of metal. Jill Hira looked up at their approach, snarling, "Stay away from me!" Obi-Wan dropped back, letting Depa take the lead. He and Jill Hira had shared enough antagonism over the past months, and now was not the time to make it worse. Depa gazed serenely upon the other master, letting her voice reflect concern and nothing else. "We missed you this morning, Lawfla." "I know," Jill Hira replied in an almost normal tone. Then she glared at the rest of the Padawans standing with Obi-Wan. "I see you brought the Play Knight, and friends of his, too." Depa inclined her head. "Yes, I did. I asked Obi-Wan to help me look for you, and these Padawans also wished to help us." Jill Hira looked down, turning the piece of metal in her hands around and around. Obi-Wan kept trying to make out what it was, but she was doing a good job of keeping the bulk of it hidden. Whatever it turned out to be, he knew it was dangerous. "I'm sure they do," Jill Hira snorted. "Give her to the mind healers. They'll fix her. Obviously, there is something wrong with her." She looked pained even as she spoke the snide words, as if she desperately wanted to agree with her own assessment. "Lawfla, I am your friend." Depa stepped forward, holding out one hand in a non-threatening gesture. "I was concerned for you. Why come all the way down here?" "I had something I was supposed to do," Jill Hira said, and then laughed in a way that made Obi-Wan's skin crawl. "One last thing, and then there won't be anything wrong with me anymore." She cradled the object in her hands, allowing the light to shine upon it. Obi-Wan's gut clenched as he realized exactly what it was. A detonator. "Depa," Obi-Wan whispered in warning, feeling a lump of ice in his chest. He was suddenly all too aware of what Jill Hira was about to do. "Anakin." "Lawfla, what is it you have done?" Depa asked, her eyes widening as she, too, realized what the other woman held. "Master?"
He gave it to me, Jilhyra said. Tears were running down her cheeks, and her eyes were full of grief. He gave it to me. Without moving her hands, she activated the device before any of them could move to stop her.